Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Some of the latest coming out of Japan, by the way, just a few minutes ago, President Obama pledged that the United States will stand with the people of Japan in the difficult days ahead, without saying quite specifically what that means. But we know there are military units there helping, and there's all kinds of aid going in. So President Obama pledges the United States will stand with the people in Japan in the difficult days ahead. And as far as the nuclear situation, the latest is that a Japanese utility says fuel rods at one of the troubled reactors have now been fully exposed, and that's bad news. The exposure happened at Unit 2 of the Fukushima Daiichi plant, the latest reactor to lose its ability to cool down. The other two reactors at the plant are facing a meltdown, potentially, and authorities are racing to cool them with seawater. That destroys the plant, by the way, but it's their last-ditch effort. Tokyo Electric Power says seawater is being channeled into Unit 2. It did not know if the rods were covered yet. And, of course, the exposure raises the risk of the reactor overheating, which can lead to meltdown. Coming up in our next segment, we will dig deep into the science of what's going on in Japan. I know you'll want to hear that. But first, when it comes to the founding of cities, it's easy to see how important waterways and the access to ports are to the historical successes of urban centers, how important they are. Paris, Rome, Buenos Aires, New York City can all trace their origins and development to the banks of rivers. But in a globalized world, we no longer rely on ports and shipping. Instead, our next guests argue that we must reorganize our cities around what really connects them to the rest of the world these days, airports. The Aerotropolis, they say, is the future of the city. Joining me now are John Casarda, professor at the University of North Carolina in the Kenan Flagler Business School, and journalist Greg Lindsay. Together they have written a book, Aerotropolis, The Way We Will Live Next. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Ryan.
John Casarda, explain the Aerotropolis. What would it look like? How would it be different from the cities with airports we have now?
Well, the Aerotropolis is basically urban development that's focused on the airport, what the airport can do for the businesses and people that reside near it, and the way in which the type of economic development, primarily production facilities and corporate offices, can leverage the passengers and traffic. It is basically a synergy between the airport and the development around it that affects both in a positive manner.
Greg Lindsay, is it too obvious a question to ask why were airports placed on the outskirts of cities to begin with?
Well, many of the original airports were on the outskirts of cities because no one knew how big they would become, or they were very small things. I mean, look, you know, Los Angeles is a classic example. When they built LAX, it was a bean field, and they imagined it as a place for air shows. And people complained that it was actually too far from downtown. It was 14 miles away. Now you look at LAX, and you know, it's been hemmed in for years. Some of the very first noise lawsuits were filed in Los Angeles. But, you know, we continue to think of airports as these sort of huge industrial nuisances, and we surround them with steel mills and auto plants and sort of things, you know, confined to the very edges of cities. And, you know, one of the arguments for America is that, you know, we should recognize airports as these sort of great transportation, you know, and infrastructure, as these sort of great tools for cities, and, you know, treat them as assets and really sort of use them as opportunities for sprawl, infill, to create transit, to really start, you know, cleaning up those sectors of the city.
So you acknowledge in the book how unpleasant it is for people to live near airports. You describe the Stapleton situation, for example.
Well, Stapleton's a fascinating example. Stapleton was the Denver airport, you know, until the 1980s mostly. And, you know, Stapleton was a classic example, built in the 20s. No one knew how often people would fly through there. And then finally, the city made the commitment to build a complete successor and shut down Stapleton. And today, Stapleton is the site of the largest new urbanist community in America, and they're going to run trains through it all the way to the new airport. But, you know, but the new airport's telling, too. It sits on 50 square miles of grass. Like, no one can live next to that airport. You can build up to the fence. You can treat it as an asset. And, you know, no one will have to live under a flight path.
So what's the vision of an Aerotropolis, John Casarda, since no one does want to live under a flight path?
They don't want to live under the flight path, but they want the convenient connectivity that the airport provides, whether it deals with their markets, their enterprise partners, their friends, relatives, or tourist sites that they like to visit. So the Aerotropolis really is a center of globalization.
Okay. You know what, John? We're going to have to call you back because we're having phone problems, and I don't think our listeners can hear you very well. So continue with co-author Greg Lindsay, author of the book Aerotropolis, The Way We'll Live Next. The conversation about transportation in this country has been framed around high-speed rail recently, particularly since the president's State of the Union speech. But in a New York Times op-ed piece in February, you wrote that this leaves out air travel, what you consider to be the fastest and safest mode of transportation. Why do you think attention isn't being paid, or aviation isn't part of this conversation of the next age of transportation? I think it's—is it the cost of air travel? Could it be the environmental stigma of aviation? I mean, it is the way people travel long-distance city to city in the United States for the most part, not by high-speed rail except in the Northeast Corridor.
Well, I mean, the fundamental reason we don't want to think about air travel as the future is because we hate it, because we hate flying in the United States, because we do so much of it, and because, you know, we hearken back to this sort of golden age that never was in the 1960s when it was unaffordable for most people. I mean, what's amazing is, you know, last year more people in America flew than in the entire – I'm sorry, more people in the world flew than in the entire 1960s combined. I mean – air travel is a massive, massive form of transportation that didn't exist in the 60s as we know it now. But, you know, to your point, though, you know, basically, you know, President Obama has also called for doubling of exports, you know, that we need to rebalance the American economy. And air travel is the only form of connectivity that's truly global. So if the United States is going to create electronics, pharmaceuticals, services, you know, our intellectual capital, air travel is really the only thing that can do it. And we need to reinvest there.
So what will really change if airports are closer in?
Well, you know, they're not really going to change in the United States. We can't even build a new airport from scratch. We'll probably never build a large hub like a Denver or a Dallas-Fort Worth, you know, which were the last big two. You know, our challenge is to basically do infill. Our challenge is to basically sort of make do with the airports we have, expand them, try to retrofit them as best we can. The more interesting developments are what's going on in China or India or the Middle East, where, you know, because, you know, 500 million people are going to urbanize in the next 10 years, they do need to build cities from scratch. And so they're choosing to build cities around airports because they want to create factory jobs. They want to create employment for these people. And that can have an effect on the American economy. That's why we're going to see more manufacturing go to China, I think.
What has to be done to American airports to get them up to speed with the rest of the world?
Well, I mean, two things. One, I think we need to look into some sort of serious expansion or figure out how we can accommodate, you know, more traffic going in and out. I think the obvious place to start is to fix air traffic control. We have an air traffic control system that's based on 1930s technology, and a plan to update it using GPS, which we almost all have on our phones and our cars at this point, but we can't fly an airplane with, has been around for 10 years and is still 15 years away. So, you know, if we can do that, I think we can boost capacity into our airports and, you know, make travel more pleasant.
There was a discussion about turning the Aqueduct Racetrack in Queens with 192 acres, and it's less than 5 miles from JFK, into an airport city. What do you think of that plan, or what would that have looked like?
Well, I didn't see the specifics of that plan, but I mean, there are other sort of, you know, similar plans afoot. I mean, one is in Atlanta, for example, where there's a private developer who's overhauling a former Ford plant. You know, they made Thunderbirds there for decades. And so that developer has sort of, you know, has done the industrial remediation, taken out all the poisonous toxic waste, and is building, you know, 15 million square feet of mixed-use office space and retail, and is going to create, you know, hopefully several thousand jobs. You know, moving from an industrial economy there to, you know, something that's more based on knowledge work and offices and consultants, people who need that connectivity.
Do people travel enough to build whole economies around airports?
Well, I mean, you could argue that our economy is already built around air travel. I mean, you know, there's statistics that that 30% of the world's goods by value, in terms of how much we value them, travels by air and comprises only 1% of the weight. I mean, all of our, you know, all of our Apple iPads, iPods, you know, they come from one factory in the middle of China. But, you know, they're designed in the United States. All that intellectual capital and the profits flow back to that. So, you know, ours is a global economy, and America is increasingly going to be more dependent on overseas customers.
How about those listeners who are grossed out by the idea of expanding the carbon footprint that much more?
And that's one of the long-term problems with air travel that's going to have to be overcome. That and, of course, you know, people look to oil prices. I mean, oil prices are a trickier thing because there is no actual direct correlation between high oil prices and air travel. I mean, they've Oil prices have tripled in the last 7 years, but the number of passengers has grown 43%, because as we grow wealthier, our time becomes more valuable. But carbon is the difficulty there, and I think that's one of the reasons we're going to need to develop sustainable biofuels that are grown from algae or microorganisms. There's several promising startups in San Francisco. I've talked to them about their technology, and you know, they can take junk sugars and they can take grass and sort of grow fuel from that. And I think that's really going to have to be the long-run solution.
How relevant is this whole idea to the New York metro area? We're so big and dense and international already.
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I mean, the Regional Plan Association recently put out a report on, you know, what New York's airports need going forward for 20 years. And, you know, I mean, the basic argument is economics. If we don't build this, it will encourage businesses to go elsewhere. We'll lose the money. But I think, you know, in the larger sense, you know, airports are talent magnets and talent projectors. It allows some of the world's brightest people to live in New York and play here and be part of the city, but, you know, continue to work halfway across the country. I have several friends who are consultants, for example. You know, they live here. They spend 3 days a week here, but 4 days a week they're on the road working with clients. But they're still New Yorkers, and we still benefit from, you know, from their taxes, if nothing else.
Well, there's that old saying about real estate, but I guess it applies to the history of civilization as a whole. Location, location, location. So in a world centered around airports and their benefits, does location matter anymore?
Well, I would say my co-author likes to say that now it's accessibility, accessibility, accessibility. But, I mean, geography still matters. It's just a question of geography has changed. I mean, you know, I mean, one of the things about transportation through the years is that, you know, humans, the scope of their movement has never changed. We daily commute 60 minutes, 30 minutes in each direction. But as transportation technology evolved to the horse, to the car, you know, the size and scope of cities changed. And one of the interesting things about air travel, especially in Europe where it's very inexpensive, is you're seeing people live halfway across Europe and commute to London to work on weekends or each week. And that's an amazing development.
Journalist Greg Lindsay, who along with business professor John Casarda has written Aerotropolis, The Way We'll Live Next. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.